Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now a parent's back-to-school guide to your kids' social media habits. If you don't know what subtweeting or aggressive liking are, for example, listen up so you know what your kids may be up to and why it's causing them joy or drama or worse. Caroline Knorr is the parenting editor at Common Sense Media, where she writes about the intersection of media, technology, and parenting. Caroline, welcome to WNYC. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay, thanks. And parents, your questions welcome here for Caroline Knorr, parenting editor at Common Sense Media, 212-433-WNYC. Those terms I just used, subtweeting and aggressive liking, they both have to do with bullying, don't they?
That's right. They're both a form of bullying. Subtweeting is something that kids do where they're talking indirectly about other kids without ever saying their names. So it's sort of like gossiping about people, but they have plausible deniability because they can say, oh, I wasn't talking about you, because they never named them by name. So subtweeting and subbooking, which is the same thing on Facebook, that happens pretty often. And then the aggressive liking is when kids will sort of surveil other kids by liking every single thing that they post on their social media sites. And it's just sort of a way of saying, I know what you're doing. I'm kind of stalking you.
What other subtle or digital forms of bullying should parents know about? Are there other ones?
Yeah, you know, kids are, for the most part, using social media responsibly. But when the sort of heady mix of drama and back to school and hormones and peer pressure and all of that sort of brew, you know, starts bubbling up, kids will use social media in, you know, they start to use it to compound some of the stuff that's going on in their real lives. And they will pretty much figure out ways to, ways to kind of, you know, subtly, you know, send other kids a message, whether it's really aggressive like cyberbullying or more subtle like the stuff that we just discussed, because they can.
So what should a parent do? Like throw in a question after saying, oh, how's the math homework? Uh-huh.
Yes.
How's the social studies? Oh, did you subtweet anybody today?
We all know that like sort of the sort of direct questions are usually met with like radio silence. So I think that, you know, some of the ways it's good to kind of get to the bottom of what your kids are doing, you know, I've often found that it helps to talk about my own social media usage. I mean, I do this with sort of when I'm trying to get information out of my kid, I will say, oh, well, my day was, you know, really stressful. And you know, and so when it comes to social media, I'll say, oh, you know, somebody said something kind of, you know, mean on social media. That tends to lubricate the conversation a little bit. But parents should absolutely be asking their kids, what apps do you have? What types of conversations do you have? Do you feel good after having those conversations? Is there anybody who's kind of, you know, misbehaving? You know, I mean, absolutely ask them questions. But I would shy away from asking direct questions because you probably won't really get the response that you need.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Brian Lehrer with Caroline Knorr, parenting editor at Common Sense Media. And parents, get ready for back to school social media world and obsession. Do you have a question about how your child is using computers, e-readers, any other digital devices or social media sites, either for educational purposes or for social purposes, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And you wrote a list, we saw, of questions that parents should be asking teachers about their child's use of technology for school purposes. So this is different than, you know, the teenage drama in the social life. Is the most important thing for parents to ask how a teacher involves screens with their kids?
I'm not sure what you're asking there exactly.
On this list, well, you could jump in anywhere you want on the list of questions that you have for parents to ask teachers. I guess I was wondering if you think parents should be concerned that teachers may be using screens too much.
That's a great question. What we found from asking our Facebook users and sort of polling the members of Common Sense is that the absolute most important thing to ask your teacher on back to school night is, how can I get in touch with you? Because everybody in this digital world is using a different form of communication. They prefer a different thing. Some people like to be direct tweeted for a question. Some teachers like email.
Which is one-on-one. That doesn't go out to all your Twitter followers for the world to see.
Yeah, exactly. But, of course, as we all know, that's subject to being public, too. But,
right.
But some
doesn't go
like
out
that.
To everybody except by accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Accidents happen a lot with grown-ups and Twitter. But go ahead.
And Anthony Weiner. So some people like... texting. Some teachers are texting. Some teachers like to be contacted by Facebook. So really, it's definitely really important to find out, how do you want to be contacted? Because you want to be able to have direct communication, but you don't want to alienate the teacher. And the worst thing is just sort of like an email going off into cyberspace with without ever getting a response. And then, of course, that kind of like engenders some digital drama between parents and teachers. So I would say, if you really want to find out about how the teacher is incorporating technology and computers into the classroom, you should absolutely ask about that, because parents are really concerned that kids are using screens at school, maybe in the computer lab or even during the, classroom as part of the curriculum, and then they come home and they're also using screen technology to do their homework or play games.
And it's very hard.
And so it all adds up.
This is one of the hardest things, I think, for parents today, is to distinguish or figure out how hard they should work to distinguish when their kids are actually doing schoolwork on their computers at home at night and when they're playing, right? I mean, in the old days, you could say, oh, I see you're playing with your baseball cards. Put away your baseball cards now and do your homework. When you're on the computer, there's no way to know.
Well, the truth is, kids are multitasking, and they're actually a little bit better at it than we give them credit for, although it is important to have them learn how to, give their focused, concentrated attention to one task. And we don't want them, watching YouTube videos or playing Minecraft when they're supposed to be doing, research on the computer, which is, of course, where kids go to do their research nowadays. So, I do think it's important for parents to keep an eye on that. There are programs, there are like parental control programs that you can get that allow you to keep your kid focused on, one program, or you can whitelist certain, websites and blacklist certain other websites that you don't want them to use between, the hours of, four and five when they're supposed to be doing homework.
And you can specifically control like a typical laptop. To whitelist and restrict certain sites at certain hours only?
Yeah, you can say, there's lots of parental control programs available that allow you to do that. So you can say, my kid, or you can say, like, no Facebook, no Minecraft, no, whatever their, recreational entertainment website du jour is. And you can say, only Wikipedia and, Google Scholar or whatever, is okay between certain hours. Yes, there are absolutely programs that you can do that. You can also use, if you have an iPad, there's a setting called Guided Access, which allows you to, freeze all other apps that except for the one that you want your kid to use. And then, of course, if you have an Android device, there's a setting called the Restricted User Profile, which allows you to basically do the same thing, to only give the user access to certain apps at certain times.
Caroline Knorr, parenting editor at Common Sense Media, as we talk about digital technology and back-to-school time, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Barbara, is she not ready? Can I go to Barbara? Barbara, you're on WNYC. Hello. Hi. Barbara, turn your radio off. Barbara, you have a question about Snapchat?
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead. Ask your question.
My question is, I have a 13 and a 15-year-old, and each one wants to get a Snapchat, and I've only heard a little bit about it, so I wanted to know if that was appropriate for them.
Okay, how old is too young, or how young is too young for Snapchat, that photo sharing site?
Well, they're allowed to be on Snapchat if they're 13. That's the COPPA restricted age, and that's for privacy issues. So Snapchat adheres to those privacy issues. If they're 13, they're allowed to get it. My advice would be that, parents should absolutely research the website, check which privacy settings they want their kids to use, and I would kind of monitor what they're doing and absolutely discuss things like the fact that Snapchats don't actually disappear, and they can be screenshotted. So you would never, ever, ever want to post anything that you do not want to become public at some point, because you can never trust what somebody else is going to do with a photo that you send them.
And you're
right. That's number one.
Good.
But, you know, kids really love Snapchat because it allows them a kind of freedom from the, oversight of their parents, who are all on Facebook and not on Snapchat. And it allows them to sort of capture casual, fun moments and write lighthearted captions to their friends. And so they really think it's fun. Most kids use it appropriately, but parents should have that conversation with their kids. And I really have to say, I think it's great that this mom, is being concerned and saying, you know what, I'm just not sure. That's the step that every parent should really take and research it. And, of course, check our website, commonsense.org, because we review every single app that comes out for kids.
Interesting. So you said something there that probably turned a lot of people's heads, which is that the photos that you share on Snapchat don't actually disappear. Because I thought that was the whole attraction of Snapchat.
Right. Well,
they disappear after a short time, so they're not going to follow you to your college application or something.
The interesting thing about Snapchat is that the user has to view the picture before it disappears. So I think it's really important for people to understand that. It doesn't just disappear. You send it to someone, and then you can set a certain amount of time before it'll supposedly self-destruct. But has to be viewed. In that time, it can be screenshotted, so it can be saved. And the other thing is, nothing ever disappears. things in the digital world, you really just can't trust that. You also can't trust that the person that you're sending something to is on the same page and has the same motives that you have, right? So that's just really basic, to know that, maybe somebody asked for an inappropriate photo. That's pretty common among teens these days, as sort of a token of their trust and allegiance to somebody. Send me this picture. And you just don't know what that other person is going to do with the photo.
Caroline Knorr, parenting editor at Common Sense Media, as we talk about social media in the back-to-school season. Parents, more questions, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I saw on your site that you said kids as young as 8 are interacting with people online. I don't know, maybe even younger. Why'd you choose 8?
Because most kids, most 8-year-olds can read. And so that's one of the important things, is they need to be able to read the site's directions, to read the chats from other kids. They're pretty, they're pretty good basic readers by that point. And so that's one of the ages. They also call eight the age of reason, and that's that sort of age where kids start becoming aware of the outside world, less oriented towards just that family unit. They become more aware of their friends and social interactions and all of that. And that's around the age when kids start getting into things like Club Penguin, Webkinz. Those are the types of sites where pretty safe types of interactions are happening, where it's like canned chat, where they can choose a phrase to say to a friend. But again, they need to be able to read to be able to send those messages.
How about device management? Lots of kids are getting smartphones in probably middle school. Some kids might be getting their own laptops around that time as well, maybe even earlier for the laptops. How hands-on should parents be about managing the smartphones of, let's say, a middle school kid or an early high school kid?
My advice for if you're going to give your kid a smartphone, I really believe that parents should keep some of the features locked until your child demonstrates enough responsibility and maturity and ability to follow your rules, and so they can earn certain privileges on their phones. I believe that things like the Safari browser, I mean, you don't want to, and video chatting, and you know, some of those communication features, really, they give kids so much power before kids are really able to understand the consequences of their actions on those phones, and they can be, and you know, things that they upload can become public, you know, immediately, and can lead to some bad consequences. So I really believe that parents should be pretty involved, be aware of how those features work, and again, I would keep them unlocked and say, okay, well, you can earn this privilege when you demonstrate that every single time mom texts you, you respond to my text. Or, you know, you need to, you know, text me when you get to when you get home after school. You know, so certain ability to just be a mature user of the phone and demonstrate that ability will unlock other privileges.
And phones, too, can be programmed through your carrier to be off at certain hours. I wonder if you can go so far as to program it to be usable as a phone, which I guess would include texting, but not usable as, you know, a device to search the internet.
Yeah, you could turn it. The thing about smartphones is every single smartphone you buy, you're going to have to buy a data plan.
Right.
They just don't allow you to have it without that. But you can turn it off. I mean, you can prevent access. You know, iPhones allow you to prevent access to almost everything except for, you know, just the ability to use it as a phone. Android devices can do that as well. So, yes, you can do that. My issue with some of the programs that track the phone, they don't always work exactly right. So, you know, those location services, you go, oh, I know exactly where my kid is because, you know, I can see his phone on a map. That's how those programs work. But if the phone is turned off, you know, the kid doesn't charge his phone, then they don't work exactly. They won't work. So I think that it's best to have those conversations with your kid. I do like the idea of keeping things locked and letting your kids earn those privileges. But, you got to have those conversations with your kid and say, these are my rules for having this phone. This is an expensive device. You know, it's for safety, it's for communication, and I need to see you, you know, display responsibility and maturity when you're using this really expensive device.
Then again, there's something to be said for having a dialogue with your kids rather than just using, the power of technology to restrict them, which might seem heavy-handed or ham-handed in some cases, and might backfire
exactly.
In terms of a teaching tool or a teachable moment.
That's exactly right. I mean, we can't rely on technology to, substitute for those conversations. Technology can be a supplement, but also I have a problem with giving the phone to the kid and saying, like, you know, I don't like to set up a dynamic where the phone is, you know, kind of like is
candy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I feel like, you know, you give the kid the phone, you say, you know, I need to see you demonstrate the maturity and the responsibility to use this, you know, according to our, you know, the family's rules. But, you know, if you use it as a form of discipline, then I think that, you know, kids might, kids are kids, so they might rebel against that.
I don't know if you saw this Huffington Post piece from last week written by a father who created an Instagram account for his 5-year-old. He noticed that the boy was enjoying taking pictures on his old digital camera and decided to use it as a teachable moment. The father acts as a gatekeeper, of course. He reserves the right to choose choose and post and veto all of his son's pictures. And he writes, there's a big, wild internet out there, and for creative kid, this is a great place to jump in. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I think it's really great that that a parent recognizes the creative potential and the fun that you can and the enjoyment that you can have. I mean, I feel like, you know, developmentally, you know, a five-year-old, it's hard to know exactly what they can really understand about that because, again, they're very family-oriented, they're very parent-oriented. They're not really super aware of the way the whole world works. So, you know, parent-led introduction to technology, I support.
Instagram, by the way, officially has a 13-year-old or older policy, I'm pretty sure, as does Facebook.
Yes, all of those are 13 because of the COPPA rules, and that's just a privacy, you know, that's a consumer privacy issue. So you can allow your younger than 13-year-old kid to, you can approve an account for them as a parent. That's the way COPPA works, is that you can register, you know, you can allow your kid to register if you approve it.
212-433-WNYC. Jose in Little Neck, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Caroline? How are you?
Hi there.
My question was, I have a daughter, she's 13 years old, and currently she's on vacation, but she uses Minecraft and other programs, I would consider excessively. But once she goes back to school, how many hours should I allow her to play or to go on these programs? And what should I consider excessive? And what are the clues that I say that I should get in order for me to think that she's doing it too much?
Caroline, you got it?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So many parents are concerned about that because especially over the summer, lots of kids have been, you know, just pretty much, you know, there's no rules in place because they don't really have to be. I would say it's really important to establish, you know, that kids do their homework first. Of course, a lot of kids are going online for their homework, so it is hard to tell exactly when they're going, you know, between the entertainment and the homework. So you want to keep an eye on that. You know, I think that it's important that kids, that you have a kind of a contract or a schedule, and you work that out either daily or weekly or whatever works for your family and say, okay, these are the things that we need to get done, you know, the chores, the after-school activities, all that kind of stuff. And these are the things that, you know, that you want to do. So, you know, I think that you also need to factor in family time, you know, that dinner hour or just coming together as a family at the end of the day is really important. It's also important that kids get their reading in. Most kids who are in elementary and middle school have, you know, a certain amount of reading minutes they have to get during the day. And then you also don't want your kids using screens way into the evening hours because that can interfere with sleep. There's a lot of studies coming out now about screen, just the glow of the screen and keeping the brain, stimulated up until the evening hours. It's hard for kids to get their sleep. So try and figure out how much screen time is not going to interfere with sleep, not going to interfere with family time, and not going to interfere with the schoolwork, which is, of course, essential. And then I think other than that, I think this gentleman is doing a great job in allowing his kid to play a great program. And Minecraft has a lot of educational benefits.
You like Minecraft?
We like Minecraft at Common Sense. We think it's a great program. Of course, you know, everything in moderation. But we
for social skills because it helps them learn interaction?
Yes, absolutely. And there's even a way that teachers are incorporating a module of Minecraft called Minecraft EDU. Which allows teachers to create sort of like pretty intricate worlds where kids can learn by interacting in those worlds and interacting with other people. And they're learning good digital citizenship habits just by the experience of being inside the Minecraft environment.
One more. Rob in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
Good. This is a really, really fascinating discussion. And I'm just wondering if the guest might comment on what the role of social media companies might be here to regulate, and not censor, but regulate use by age. The assumption seems to be that it's all up to the parents. And I'm thinking about, media pressure groups like Action for Children's Television and, in the 70s and 80s that tried to say, hey, these companies are really powerful, and can we really say it's just the parents' responsibility?
It's a great question, because this whole segment has been based around personal advice. So to kind of wrap it up, Caroline, do you take policy positions in the
Absolutely.
Sense that you ask things of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and et cetera that you want them to do for the protection of kids?
Yes. Common Sense Media does call on these social media companies to understand that kids are using those programs. We believe that they do have a responsibility to ensure that kids can use them safely without becoming cyberbullied. And without allowing, something that they post in a moment to, follow them for the rest of their lives, we absolutely believe that companies do have a responsibility. And I think that we're seeing a little bit more of that. We're seeing Snapchat going, okay, you know what, I think we're going to review our policies and see if they really are, good for kids. And I think that parents should really take a look at those privacy settings that are offered. They should look at the reporting, like cyberbullying reporting. Most social media companies have a horrible way of allowing kids to report cyberbullying. It just basically goes into the ether, and you really kind of don't know what's going on. And this can be extremely painful for a family who's experiencing it. And as we discussed at the beginning of the hour, kids are trying to find subtle ways to evade detection. And these social media companies are absolutely aware of that. They can develop algorithms to determine if their social media sites are being misused, and we believe that they should.
Caroline Knorr is parenting editor at Common Sense Media, and I think you've given people a lot of really good information and some great tools to use if they're parents of kids as we get ready for the school year again. And commonsensemedia.org has a lot of good stuff on their website that I've been looking at over the last day. One of them is 18 questions to ask on back to school night. And they actually have a section. You must know these big New York City public schools, because you have a section on here, if you have 5 minutes with the teacher.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And another one, if you have 10 minutes with the teacher. You know you're in a New York City public school when parent-teacher conferences are 3 to 5 minutes.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you want to get your most important questions in quickly, and technology and media is going to play a major role in the school year at every grade. So you definitely want to get those questions answered when you meet with the teacher, depending on how much time you have.
And we have a link at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, where you can get to their stuff as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Why don't more people get the HPV vaccine? Stay tuned.